The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. Continued. HaleandFire.com. Now, I beheld in my dream, that they had not journeyed far, but the river and the way for a time parted. At which they were not a little sorry, yet they durst not go out of the way. Now the way from the river was rough, and their feet tender, by reason of their travels. So the souls of the pilgrims were much discouraged because of the way. Wherefore, still as they went on, they wished for better way. Now, a little before them, there was on the left hand of the road a meadow, and a stile to go over into it. And that meadow is called by Path Meadow. Then said Christian to his fellow, "If this meadow lieth along by our wayside, let us go over into it." Then he went to the stile to see, and behold, a path lay along by the way, on the other side of the fence. "It is according to my wish," said Christian. "Here is the easiest going. Come, good Hopeful, and let us go over." Hopeful. "But how if this path should lead us out of the way?" Christian. "That is not like," said the other. "Look, doth it not go along by the wayside?" So Hopeful, being persuaded by his fellow, went after him over the stile. When they were gone over, and were got into the path, they found it very easy for their feet. And withal, they, looking before them, espied a man walking as they did. And his name was Vain Confidence. So they called after him, and asked him whither that way led. He said, "To the Celestial Gate." "Look," said Christian, "did not I tell you so? By this you may see we are right." So they followed, and he went before them. But, behold, the night came on, and it grew very dark, so that they that were behind lost a sight of him that went before. He, therefore, that went before, Vain Confidence by name, not seeing the way before him, fell into a deep pit, which was on purpose there made, by the prince of those grounds, to catch vainglorious fools withal, and was dashed in pieces with his fall. Now Christian and his fellow heard him fall. So they called to know the matter, but there was none to answer, only they heard a groaning. Then said Hopeful, "Where are we now?" Then was his fellow silent, as mistrusting that he had led him out of the way. And now it began to rain, and thunder, and lighten in a very dreadful man, and the water rose amain. Then Hopeful groaned in himself, saying, "Oh, that I had kept on my way." Christian. "Who could have thought that this path should have led us out of the way?" Hopeful. "I was afraid on it at the very first, and therefore gave you that gentle caution. I would have spoken plainer, but that you are older than I." Christian's repentance for leading of his brother out of the way. Christian. "Good brother, be not offended. I am sorry I have brought thee out of the way, and that I have put thee into such imminent danger. Pray, my brother, forgive me. I did not do it of an evil intent." Hopeful. "Be comforted, my brother, for I forgive thee. And believe, too, that this shall be for our good." Christian. "I am glad I have with me a merciful brother. But we must not stand thus, let us try to go back again." Hopeful. "But, good brother, let me go before." Christian. "No, if you please, let me go first, that if there be any danger, I may be first therein, because by my means we are both gone out of the way." Hopeful. "No," said Hopeful, "you shall not go first, for your mind being troubled may lead you out of the way again." Then, for their encouragement, they heard the voice of one saying, "Set thine heart toward the highway, even the way which thou wentest. Turn again." But by this time the waters were greatly risen, by reason of which the way of going back was very dangerous. Then I thought that it is easier going out of the way, when we are in, than going in when we are out. Yet they adventured to go back, but it was so dark, and the flood was so high, that in their going back they had like to have been drowned 9 or 10 times. Neither could they, with all the skill they had, get again to the stile that night. Wherefore, at last, lighting under a little shelter, they sat down there until the daybreak. But, being weary, they fell asleep. Now there was, Not far from the place where they lay, a castle called Doubting Castle, the owner whereof was Giant Despair. And it was in his grounds they now were sleeping, wherefore he, getting up in the morning early, and walking up and down in his fields, caught Christian and Hopeful asleep in his grounds. Then, with a grim and surly voice, he bid them awake, and asked them whence they were, and what they did in his grounds. They told him they were pilgrims, and that they had lost their way. Then said the giant, "You have this night trespassed on me, by trampling in and lying on my grounds, and therefore you must go along with me." So they were forced to go, because he was stronger than they. They also had but little to say, for they knew themselves in a fault. The giant, therefore, drove them before him, and put them into his castle, into a very dark dungeon, nasty and stinking to the spirits of these two men. Here, then, they lay from Wednesday morning till Saturday night, without one bit of bread, or drop of drink, or light, or any to ask how they did. They were, therefore, here in evil case, and were far from friends and acquaintance. Now in this place Christian had double sorrow, because it was through his unadvised counsel that they were brought into this distress. The pilgrims now, to gratify the flesh, will seek its ease. But oh! How their flesh do thereby plunge themselves new griefs into. Who seek to please the flesh, themselves undo. Now, Giant Despair had a wife, and her name was Diffidence. So when he was gone to bed, he told his wife what he had done. To wit, that he had taken a couple of prisoners and cast them into his dungeon, for trespassing on his grounds. Then he asked her also what he had best to do further to them. So she asked him what they were, whence they came, and whither they were bound. And he told her. Then she counseled him that when he arose in the morning he should beat them without any mercy. So, when he arose, he getteth him a grievous crabtree cudgel, and goes down into the dungeon to them, and there first falls to rating of them as if they were dogs, although they never gave him a word of distaste. Then he falls upon them, and beats them fearfully, in such sort that they were not able to help themselves, or to turn them upon the floor. This done, he withdraws and leaves them there to condole their misery and to mourn under their distress. So all that day they spent the time in nothing but sighs and bitter lamentations. The next night, she, talking with her husband about them further, and understanding they were yet alive, did advise him to counsel them to make away themselves. So when morning was come, he goes to them in a surly manner as before, and perceiving them to be very sore with the stripes that he had given them the day before, he told them, that since they were never like to come out of that place, their only way would be forthwith to make an end of themselves, either with knife, halter, or poison. "For why," said he, "should you choose life, seeing it is attended with so much bitterness?" But they desired him to let them go. With that he looked ugly upon them, and, rushing to them, had doubtless made an end of them himself, but that he fell into one of his fits. For he sometimes, in sunshiny weather, fell into fits, and lost for a time the use of his hand. Wherefore he withdrew, and left them as before, to consider what to do. Then did the prisoners consult between themselves whether it was best to take his counsel or no. And thus they began to discourse. Christian. "Brother," said Christian, "what shall we do? The life that we now live is miserable. For my part I know not whether it is best, to live thus, or to die out of hand. My soul quoseth strangling rather than life, and the grave is more easy for me than this dungeon. Shall we be ruled by the giant?" Hopeful. "Indeed, our present condition is dreadful, and death would be far more welcome to me than thus forever to abide. But yet, let us consider, the lord of the country to which we are going hath said, thou shalt do no murder, no, not to another man's person. Much more, then, are we forbidden to take his counsel to kill ourselves. Besides, he that kills another, can but commit murder upon his body. But for one to kill himself is to kill body and soul at once. And, moreover, my brother, thou talkst of ease in the grave. But hast thou forgotten the hell, for certain the murderers go, for no murderer hath eternal life, ampersand C. And let us consider, again, that all the law is not in the hand of giant despair. Others, so far as I can understand, have been taken by him, as well as we, and yet have escaped out of his hand. Who knows, but the God that made the world may cause that giant despair may die. Or that, at some time or other, he may forget to lock us in. Or that he may, in a short time, have another of his fits before us, and may lose the use of his limbs. And if ever that should come to pass again, for my part, I am resolved to pluck up the heart of a man, and to try my utmost to get from under his hand. I was a fool that I did not try to do it before. But, however, my brother, let us be patient, and endure a while. The time may come that may give us a happy release. But let us not be our own murderers. With these words Hopeful at present did moderate the mind of his brother. So they continued together. In the dark that day, in their sad and doleful condition. Well, towards evening, the giant goes down into the dungeon again, to see if his prisoners had taken his counsel. But when he came there he found them alive. And truly, alive was all. For now, what for want of bread and water, and by reason of the wounds they received when he beat them, they could do little but breathe. But, I say, he found them alive. At which he fell into a grievous rage, and told them that, seeing they had disobeyed his counsel, it should be worse with them than if they had never been born. At this they trembled greatly, and I think that Christian fell into a swoon. But, coming a little to himself again, they renewed their discourse about the giant's counsel, and whether yet they had best to take it or no. Now Christian again seemed to be for doing it, but Hopeful made his second reply as followeth. Hopeful. My brother, said he, rememberest thou not how valiant thou hast been heretofore? Appling could not crush thee, nor could all that thou didst hear, or see, or feel, in the valley of the shadow of death. What hardship, terror, and amazement hast thou already gone through? And art thou now nothing but fear? Thou seest that I am in the dungeon with thee, a far weaker man by nature than thou art. Also, this giant has wounded me as well as thee, and hath also cut off the bread and water from my mouth. And with thee I mourn without the light. But let us exercise a little more patience. Remember how thou playedst the man at Vanity Fair, and wast neither afraid of the chain, nor cage, nor yet of bloody death. Wherefore let us, at least to avoid the shame, that becomes not a Christian to be found in, bear up with patience as well as we can. Now, night being come again, and the giant and his wife being in bed, she asked him concerning the prisoners, and if they had taken his counsel. To which he replied, they are sturdy rogues, they choose rather to bear all hardship, than to make away themselves. Then said she, take them into the castle yard tomorrow, and show them the bones and skulls of those that thou hast already dispatched, and make them believe, ere a week comes to an end, thou also wilt tear them in pieces, as thou hast done their fellows before them. So when the morning was come, the giant goes to them again, and takes them into the castle yard, and shows them, as his wife had bidden him. These, said he, were pilgrims as you are, once, and they trespassed in my grounds, as you have done. And when I thought fit, I tore them in pieces, and so, within 10 days, I will do. Go, get you down to your den again. And with that he beat them all the way thither. They lay, therefore, all day on Saturday in a lamentable case, as before. Now, when night was come, and when Mrs. Diffidence and her husband, the giant, were got to bed, they began to renew their discourse of their prisoners. And withal the old giant wondered, that he could neither by his blows nor his counsel bring them to an end. And with that his wife replied, I fear, said she, that they live in hope that some will come to relieve them, or that they have picked locks about them, by the means of which they hope to escape. And sayst thou so, my dear? Said the giant. I will, therefore, search them in the morning. Well, on Saturday, about midnight, they began to pray, and continued in prayer till almost break of day. Now a little before it was day, good Christian, as one half amazed, break out in passionate speech, "What a fool," quoth he, "am I, thus to lie in a stinking dungeon, when I may as well walk at liberty? I have a key in my bosom called Promise, that will, I am persuaded, open any lock in Doubting Castle." Then said Hopeful, "That's good news. Good brother, pluck it out of thy bosom and try." A key in Christian's bosom, called Promise, opens any lock in Doubting Castle. Then Christian pulled it out of his bosom, and began to try at the dungeon door, whose bolt, as he turned the key, gave back, and the door flew open with ease, and Christian and Hopeful both came out. Then he went to the outward door that leads into the castle yard, and with his key opened that door also. After he went to the iron gate, for that must be opened too, but that lock went damnable hard, yet the key did open it. Then they thrust open the gate to make their escape with speed. But that gate as it opened made such a creaking, that it waked Giant Despair, who hastily rising to pursue his prisoners, felt his limbs to fail, for his fits took him again, so that he could by no means go after them. Then they went on, and came to the king's highway again, and so were safe, because they were out of his jurisdiction. Now, when they were over the stile, they began to contrive with themselves what they should do at that stile to prevent those that should come after from falling into the hands of Giant Despair. So they consented to erect there a pillar, and to engrave upon the side thereof this sentence, "Over this stile is the way to Doubting Castle, which is kept by Giant Despair, who displeaseth the King of the Celestial Country, and seeks to destroy his holy pilgrims. Many, therefore, that followed after read what was written, and escaped the danger." This done, they sang as follows: "Out of the way we went, and then we found what 'twas to tread upon forbidden ground. And let them that come after have a care, lest heedlessness makes them, as we, to fare. Lest they for trespassing his prisoners are, whose castles are Doubting, and whose names Despair." They went then till they came to the Delectable Mountains, which mountains belong to the Lord of that hill of which we have spoken before. So they went up to the mountains, to behold the gardens and orchards, the vineyards and fountains of water, where also they drank and washed themselves, and did freely eat of the vineyards. Now there were on the tops of these mountains shepherds feeding their flocks, and they stood by the highway side. The pilgrims therefore went to them, and leaning upon their staves, as is common with weary pilgrims when they stand to talk with any by the way, they asked, "Whose delectable mountains are these? And whose be the sheep that feed upon them?" Mountains delectable they now ascend, where shepherds be, which to them do commend alluring things, and things that cautious are, pilgrims are steady kept by faith and fear. Shepherd: "These mountains are Emmanuel's land, and they are within sight of his city. And the sheep also are his, and he laid down his life for them." Christian: "Is this the way to the celestial city?" Shepherd: "You are just in your way." Christian: "How far is it thither?" Shepherd: "Too far for any but those that shall get thither indeed." Christian: "Is the way safe or dangerous?" Shepherd: "Safe for those for whom it is to be safe. But the transgressors shall fall therein." Christian: "Is there, in this place, any relief for pilgrims that are weary and faint in the way?" Shepherd: "The Lord of these mountains hath given us a charge not to be forgetful to entertain strangers, therefore the good of the place is before you." I saw also in my dream, that when the shepherds perceived that they were wayfaring men, they also put questions to them, to which they made answer as in other places, as, "Whence came you?" and, "How got you into the way?" and, "By what means have you so persevered therein?" For but few of them that begin to come hither do show their face on these mountains. But when the shepherds heard their answers, being pleased therewith, they looked very lovingly upon them, and said, "Welcome to the Delectable Mountains." The shepherds, I say, whose names were Knowledge, Experience, Watchful, and Sincere, took them by the hand, and led them to their tents, and made them partake of that which was ready at present. They said, Moreover, we would that ye should stay here a while, to be acquainted with us, and yet more to solace yourself with the good of these delectable mountains. They then told them, that they were content to stay. So they went to their rest that night, because it was very late. Then I saw in my dream, that in the morning the shepherds called up to Christian and Hopeful to walk with them upon the mountains. So they went forth with them, and walked a while, having a pleasant prospect on every side. Then said the shepherds one to another, Shall we show these pilgrims some wonders? So when they had concluded to do it, they had them first to the top of a hill called Era, which was very steep on the furthest side, and bid them look down to the bottom. So Christian and Hopeful looked down, and saw at the bottom several men dashed all to pieces by a fall that they had from the top. Then said Christian, What meaneth this? The shepherds answered, Have you not heard of them that were made to err by hearkening to Hymenoeus and Philetus as concerning the faith of the resurrection of the body? They answered, Yes. Then said the shepherds, Those that you see lie dashed in pieces at the bottom of this mountain are they. And they have continued to this day unburied, as you see, for an example to others to take heed how they clamber too high, or how they come too near the brink of this mountain. Then I saw that they had them to the top of another mountain, and the name of that is Caution, and bid them look afar off. Which, when they did, they perceived, as they thought, several men walking up and down among the tombs that were there. And they perceived that the men were blind, because they stumbled sometimes upon the tombs, and because they could not get out from among them. Then said Christian, What means this? The shepherds then answered, Did you not see a little below these mountains a stile, that led into a meadow, on the left hand of this way? They answered, Yes. Then said the shepherds, From that stile there goes a path that leads directly to Doubting Castle, which is kept by Giant Despair, and these, pointing to them among the tombs, came once on pilgrimage, as you do now, even till they came to that same stile. And because the right way was rough in that place, they chose to go out of it into that meadow, and they were taken by Giant Despair, and cast into Doubting Castle, where, after they had been a while kept in the dungeon, he at last did put out their eyes, and led them among those tombs, where he has left them to wander to this very day, that the saying of the wise man might be fulfilled, He that wandereth out of the way of understanding, shall remain in the congregation of the dead. Then Christian and Hopeful looked upon one another, with tears gushing out, but yet said nothing to the shepherds. Then I saw in my dream, that the shepherds had them to another place, in a bottom, where was a door in the side of a hill, and they opened the door, and bid them look in. They looked in, therefore, and saw that within it was very dark and smoky. They also thought that they heard there a rumbling noise as of fire, and a cry of some tormented, and that they smelt the scent of brimstone. Then said Christian, What means this? The shepherds told them, This is a byway to hell, a way that hypocrites go in at. Namely, such as sell their birthright, with Esau. Such as sell their master, with Judas. Such as blaspheme the gospel, with Alexander. And that lion dissemble, with Ananias and Sapphira his wife. Then said Hopeful to the shepherds, I perceive that these had on them, even every one, a show of pilgrimage, as we have now. Had they not? Shepherd. Yes, and held it a long time too. Hopeful. How far might they go on in pilgrimage in their day, since they notwithstanding were thus miserably cast away? Shepherd. Some further, and some not so far, as these mountains. Then said the pilgrims one to another, We have need to cry to the strong for strength. Shepherd. Aye, and you will have need to use it, when you have it, too. By this time the pilgrims had a desire to go forward, and the shepherds a desire they should. So they walked together towards the end of the mountains. Then said the shepherds one to another, Let us here show to the pilgrims the gates of the celestial city, if they have skill to look through our perspective glass. The pilgrims then lovingly accepted the motion. So they had them to the top of a high hill, called Clear, and gave them their glass to look. Then they essayed to look, but the remembrance of that last thing that the shepherds had shown them, made their hands shake. By means of which impediment, they could not look steadily through the glass. Yet they thought they saw something like the gate, and also some of the glory of the place. Then they went away, and sang this song. Thus, by the shepherds, secrets are revealed, which from all other men kept concealed. Come to the shepherds, then, if you would see things deep, things hid, and that mysterious be. When they were about to depart, one of the shepherds gave them a note of the way. Another of them bid them beware of the flatterer. The third bid them take heed that they sleep not upon the enchanted ground. And the fourth bid them Godspeed. So I awoke from my dream. And I slept, and dreamed again, and saw the same two pilgrims going down the mountains along the highway towards the city. Now, a little below these mountains, on the left hand, lieth the country of Conceit. From which country there comes into the way in which the pilgrims walked, a little crooked lane. Here, therefore, they met with a very brisk lad, that came out of that country, and his name was Ignorance. So Christian asked him from what parts he came, and whither he was going. Ignorance. Sir, I was born in the country that lieth off there a little on the left hand, and I am going to the celestial city. Christian. But how do you think to get in at the gate? For you may find some difficulty there. Ignorance. As other people do, said he. Christian. But what have you to show at that gate, that may cause that the gate should be opened to you? Ignorance. I know my Lord's will, and I have been a good liver. I pay every man his own. I pray, fast, pay tithes, and give alms, and have left my country for whither I am going. Christian. But thou camest not in at the wicket gate that is at the head of this way. Thou camest in hither through the same crooked lane, and therefore, I fear, however thou mayst think of thyself, when the reckoning day shall come, thou wilt have laid to thy charge that thou art a thief and a robber, instead of getting admittance into the city. Ignorance. Gentlemen, ye be utter strangers to me, I know you not. Be content and follow the religion of your country, and I will follow the religion of mine. I hope all will be well. And as for the gate that you talk of, all the world knows that that is a great way off of our country. I cannot think that any man in all our parts doth so much as know the way to it, nor need they matter whether they do or no, since we have, as you see, a fine, pleasant green lane, that comes down from our country, the next way into the way. When Christian saw that the man was wise in his own conceit, he said to Hopeful, Springly, there is more hope of a fool than of him. And said, Moreover, when he that is a fool walketh by their way, his wisdom faileth him, and he saith to every one that he is a fool. What, shall we talk further with him, or outgo him at present, and so leave him to think of what he hath heard already, and then stop again for him afterwards, and see if by degrees we can do any good to him? Then said Hopeful, Let Ignorance a little while now muse on what is said, and let him not refuse good counsel to embrace, lest he remain still ignorant of what's the chiefest gain. God saith, Those that no understanding have, although he made them he will not save. Hopeful. He further added, It is not good, I think, to say all to him at once. Let us pass him by, if you will, and talk to him anon, even as he is able to bear it. So they both went on, and Ignorance he came after. Now when they had passed him a little way, they entered into a very dark lane, where they met a man whom seven devils had bound with seven strong cords, and were carrying of him back to the door that they saw on the side of the hill. Now good Christian began to tremble, and so did Hopeful his companion. Yet as the devils led away the man, Christian looked to see if he knew him. And he thought it might be one turn away, that dwelt in the town of Apostasy. But he did not perfectly see his face, for he did hang his head like a thief that is found. But being once past, Hopeful looked after him, and espied on his back a paper with this inscription, Wanton Professor and Damnable Apostate. Then said Christian to his fellow, Now I call to remembrance that which was told me of a thing that happened to a good man hereabout. The name of the man was Little Faith, but a good man, and he dwelt in the town of Sincere. The thing was this. At the entering in at this passage, there comes down from Broadway Gate, a lane called Dead Man's Lane. So called because of the murders that are commonly done there. And this Little Faith going on pilgrimage, as we do now, chanced to sit down there, and slept. Now there happened, at that time, to come down the lane, from Broadway Gate, three sturdy rogues, and their names were Faint Heart, Mistrust, and Guilt. Three brothers, and they spying Little Faith, where he was, came galloping up with speed. Now the good man was just awake from his sleep, and was getting up to go on his journey. So they came up all to him, and with threatening language bid him stand. At this Little Faith looked as white as a clout, and had neither power to fight nor fly. Then said Faint Heart, Deliver thy purse. But he making no haste to do it. For he was loath to lose his money, Mistrust ran up to him, and thrusting his hand into his pocket, pulled out thence a bag of silver. Then he cried out, Thieves! Thieves! With that Guilt, with a great club that was in his hand, struck Little Faith on the head, and with that blow felled him flat to the ground, where he lay bleeding as one that would bleed to death. All this while the thieves stood by. But, at last, they hearing that some were upon the road, and fearing lest it should be one great grace, that dwells in the city of good confidence, they betook themselves to their heels, and left this good man to shift for himself. Now, after a while, Little Faith came to himself, and getting up, made shift to scrabble on his way. This was the story. Hopeful. But did they take from him all that ever he had? Chr. No. The place where his jewels were they never ransacked, so those he kept still. But, as I was told, the good man was much afflicted for his loss, for the thieves got most of his spending money. That which they got not. As I said, were jewels. Also he had a little odd money left, but scarce enough to bring him to his journey's end. Nay, if I was not misinformed, he was forced to beg as he went, to keep himself alive. For his jewels he might not sell. But beg, and do what he could, he went. As we say, with many a hungry belly the most part of the rest of the way. Hopeful. But is it not a wonder they got not from him his certificate, by which he was to receive his admittance at the celestial gate? Christian. It is a wonder. But they got not that, though they mistook not through any good cunning of his. For he, being dismayed with their coming upon him, had neither power nor skill to hide anything. So it was more by good providence than by his endeavour, that they missed of that good thing. Hopeful. But it must needs be a comfort to him, that they got not his jewels from him. Christian. It might have been great comfort to him, had he used it as he should. But they that told me the story said, that he made but little use of it all the rest of the way, and that because of the dismay that he had in the taking away his money, indeed, he forgot it a great part of the rest of his journey. And besides, when at any time it came into his mind, and he began to be comforted therewith, then would fresh thoughts of his loss come again upon him, and those thoughts would swallow up all. Hopeful. Alas! Poor man! This could not but be a great grief to him. Christian. Grief. Aye, a grief indeed. Would it not have been so to any of us, had we been used as he, to be robbed, and wounded too, and that in a strange place, as he was? It is a wonder he did not die with grief, poor heart. I was told that he scattered almost all the rest of the way with nothing but doleful and bitter complaints, telling also to all that overtook him, all that he overtook in the way as he went, where he was robbed, and how, who they were that did it, and what he lost, how he was wounded, and that he hardly escaped with his life. Hopeful. But it is a wonder that his necessity did not put him upon selling or pawning some of his jewels, that he might have wherewith to relieve himself in his journey. Christian. Thou talkst like one upon whose head is the shell to this very day. For what should he pawn them, Or to whom should he sell them? In all that country where he was robbed, his jewels were not accounted of. Nor did he want that relief which could from thence be administered to him. Besides, had his jewels been missing at the gate of the celestial city, he had, and that he knew well enough, been excluded from an inheritance there, and that would have been worse to him than the appearance and villainy of 10,000 thieves. Hopeful, why art thou so tart, my brother? Esau sold his birthright, and that for a mess of pottage, and that birthright was his greatest jewel. And if he, why might not little Faith do so too? Christian. Esau did sell his birthright indeed, and so do many besides, and by so doing exclude themselves from the chief blessing, as also that caitiff did. But you must put a difference betwixt Esau and little Faith, and also betwixt their estates. Esau's birthright was typical, but little Faith's jewels were not so. Esau's belly was his god, but little Faith's belly was not so. Esau's want lay in his fleshly appetite, little Faith's did not so. Besides, Esau could see no further than to the fulfilling of his lusts. Behold, I am at the point to die, said he, and what profit shall this birthright do me? But little Faith, though it was his lot to have but a little faith, was by his little faith kept from such extravagances, and made to see and prize his jewels more than to sell them, as Esau did his birthright. You read not anywhere that Esau had faith, no, not so much as a little. Therefore, no marvel if, where the flesh only bears sway, as it will in that man where no faith is to resist, if he sells his birthright, and his soul and all, and that to the devil of hell. For it is with such, as it is with the ass, who in her occasions cannot be turned away. When their minds are set upon their lusts, they will have them whatever they cost. But little Faith was of another temper, his mind was on things divine. His livelihood was upon things that were spiritual, and from above. Therefore, to what end should he that is of such a temper sell his jewels? Had there been any that would have bought them, to fill his mind with empty things? Will a man give a penny to fill his belly with hay? Or can you persuade the turtle dove to live upon carrion like the crow? Though faithless ones can, for carnal lusts, pawn, or mortgage, or sell what they have, and themselves outright to boot. Yet they that have faith, saving faith, though but a little of it, cannot do so. Here, therefore, my brother, is thy mistake. Hopeful. I acknowledge it. But yet your severe reflection had almost made me angry. Christian. Why, I did but compare thee to some of the birds that are of the brisker sort, who will run to and fro in untrodden paths, with the shell upon their heads. But pass by that, and consider the matter under debate, and all shall be well betwixt thee and me. Hopeful. But, Christian, these three fellows, I am persuaded in my heart, are but a company of cowards. Would they have run else, think you, as they did, at the noise of one that was coming on the road? Why did not little Faith pluck up a greater heart? He might, methinks, have stood one brush with them, and have yielded when there had been no remedy. Christian. That they are cowards, many have said, but few have found it so in the time of trial. As for a great heart, little Faith had none. And I perceive by thee, my brother, hadst thou been the man concerned, thou art but for a brush, and then to yield. And, verily, since this is the height of thy stomach, now they are at a distance from us, should they appear to thee as they did to him, they might put thee to second thoughts. But, consider again, they are but journeymen thieves, they serve under the king of the bottomless pit, who, if need be, will come into their aid himself, and his voice is as the roaring of a lion. I myself have been engaged as this little Faith was, and I found it a terrible thing. These three villains set upon me, and I beginning, like a Christian, to resist, they gave but a call, and in came their master. I would, as the saying is, have given my life for a penny, but that, as God would have it, I was clothed with armor of proof. Aye, and yet, though I was so harnessed, I found it hard work to quit myself like a man. No man can tell what in that combat attends us, but he that hath been in the battle himself. Hopeful. Well, but they ran, you see, when they did but suppose that one great grace was in the way. Christian. True, they have often fled, both they and their master, when great grace hath but appeared. And no marvel. For he is the king's champion. But, I trow, you will put some difference betwixt little faith and the king's champion. All the king's subjects are not his champions, nor can they, when tried, do such feats of war as he. Is it meet to think that a little child should handle Goliath as David did? Or that there should be the strength of an ox in a wren? Some are strong, some are weak. Some have great faith, some have little. This man was one of the weak, and therefore he went to the wall. Hopeful. I would it had been great grace for their sakes. Christian. If it had been, he might have had his hands full. For I must tell you, that the great grace is excellent good at his weapons, and has, and can, so long as he keeps them at sword's point, do well enough with them. Yet, if they get within him, even faint heart, mistrust, or the other, it shall go hard but they will throw up his heels. And when a man is down, you know, what can he do? Whoso looks well upon great grace's face, shall see those scars and cuts there, that shall easily give demonstration of what I say. Yea, once I heard that he should say, and that when he was in the combat, we despaired even of life. How did these sturdy rogues and their fellows make David groan, mourn, and roar? Yea, Haman, and Hezekiah, too, though champions in their day, were forced to bestir them, when by these assaulted. And yet, notwithstanding, they had their coats soundly brushed by them. Peter, upon a time, would go try what he could do. But though some do say of him that he is the prince of the apostles, they handled him so, that they made him at last afraid of a sorry girl. Leviathan's sturdiness. Besides, the king is at their whistle. He is never out of hearing. And if at any time they be put to the worst, he, if possible, comes in to help them. And of him it is said, the sword of him that layeth at him cannot hold the spear, the dart, nor the habergeon. He esteemeth iron as straw, and brass as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee. Sling stones are turned with him into stubble. Darts are counted as stubble, he laugheth at the shaking of a spear. What can a man do in this case? It is true, if a man could, at every turn, have Job's horse, and had skill and courage to ride him, he might do notable things. For his neck is clothed with thunder, he will not be afraid of the grasshopper. The glory of his nostrils is terrible, he paweth in the valley, and rejoiceth in his strength, he goeth on to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear, and is not affrighted, neither turneth he back from the sword. The quiver atleth against him, the glittering spear, and the shield. He swalloweth the ground with fierceness and rage, neither believeth he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpets, Ha, ha! And he smelleth the battle afar off, the thunder of the captains, and the shouting. But for such footmen as thee and I are, let us never desire to meet with an enemy, nor vaunt as if we could do better, when we hear of others that they have been foiled, nor be tickled at the thoughts of our own manhood. For such commonly come by the worst when tried. Witness Peter, of whom I made mention before. He would swagger, aye, he would. He would, as his vain mind prompted him to say, do better, and stand more for his master than all men. But whoso foiled, and run down by these villains, as he? When, therefore, we hear that such robberies are done on the king's highway, two things become us to do, one. To go out harnessed, and to be sure to take a shield with us. For it was for want of that, that he that laid so lustily at Leviathan could not make him a yield. For, indeed, if that be wanting, he fears us not at all. Therefore, he that had skill hath said, above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. 2. It is good, also, that we desire of the king a convoy, yea, that he will go with us himself. This made David rejoice when in the valley of the shadow of death, And Moses was rather for dying where he stood, than to go one step without his God. Oh, my brother, if he will but go along with us, what need we be afraid of 10,000s that shall set themselves against us? But, without him, the proud helpers fall under the slain. I, for my part, have been in the fray before now. And though, through the goodness of him that does best, I am, as you see, alive, yet I cannot boast of my manhood. Glad shall I be, if I meet with no more such brands, though I fear we are not got beyond all danger. However, since the lion and the bear have not as yet devoured me, I hope God will also deliver us from the next uncircumcised Philistine. Then sang Christian. Poor little faith! Hast been among the thieves? Waste robbed? Remember this, whoso believes, and gets more faith, shall then a victor be over 10,000, else scarce over 3. So they went on and ignorance followed. They went then till they came at a place where they saw a way put itself into their way, and seemed withal to lie as straight as the way which they should go, and here they knew not which of the two to take, for both seemed straight before them. Therefore, here they stood still to consider. And as they were thinking about the way, behold a man, black of flesh, but covered with a very light robe, came to them, and asked them why they stood there. They answered they were going to the celestial city, but knew not which of these ways to take. Follow me, said the man, it is thither that I am going. So they followed him in the way that but now came into the road, which by degrees turned, and turned them so from the city that they desired to go to, that, in little time, their faces were turned away from it. Yet they followed him. But by and by, before they were aware, he led them both within the compass of a net, in which they were both so entangled that they knew not what to do. And with that the white robe fell off the black man's back. Then they saw where they were. Wherefore, there they lay crying some time, for they could not get themselves out. Christian. Then said Christian to his fellow, now do I see myself in error. Did not the shepherds bid us beware of the flatterers? As is the saying of the wise man, so we have found it this day. A man that flattereth his neighbor, spreadeth a net for his feet. Hopeful. They also gave us a note of directions about the way, for our more sure finding thereof. But therein we have also forgotten to read, and have not kept ourselves from the paths of the destroyer. Here David was wiser than we. For, saith he, concerning the works of men, by the word of thy lips, I have kept me from the paths of the destroyer. Thus they lay bewailing themselves in the net. At last they espied a shining one coming towards them with a whip of small cord in his hand. When he was come to the place where they were, he asked them whence they came, and what they did there. They told him that they were poor pilgrims going to Zion, but were led out of their way by a black man, clothed in white, who bid us, said they, follow him, for he was going thither too. Then said he with the whip, it is flatterer, a false apostle, that hath transformed himself into an angel of light. So he rent the net, and let the men out. Then said he to them, follow me, that I may set you in your way again. So he led them back to the way which they had left to follow the flatterer. Then he asked them, saying, where did you lie the last night? They said, with the shepherds upon the Delectable Mountains. He asked them then if they had not of those shepherds a note of direction for the way. They answered, yes. But did you, said he, when you were at a stand, pluck out and read your note? They answered, no. He asked them, why? They said, they forgot. He asked, moreover, if the shepherds did not bid them beware of the flatterer. They answered, yes, but we did not imagine, said they, that this fine-spoken man had been he. Then I saw in my dream that he commanded them to lie down, which, when they did, he chastised them sore, to teach them the good way wherein they should walk. And as he chastised them he said, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. This done, he bid them go on their way, and take good heed to the other directions of the shepherds. So they thanked him for all his kindness, and went softly along the right way, singing, Come hither, you that walk along the way. See how the pilgrims fare that go astray. They catch tar in an entangling net, cause they good counsel lightly did forget, 'tis true they rescued were, but yet you see, they scourged to boot. Let this your caution be.